So I guess I'll just start then.
Yep.
God, I was gonna do a David Hayter impersonation too. Hi, welcome to the Game of Mavens podcast. I just had to spittle. Anyway.
Podcast.
Podcast.
Podcast. Computer. Metal Gear. I'm sorry.
Recorded audio.
I forgot to start this over again.
Over.
You know, just delete it.
I'm sorry. I just messed that all up.
I just keep coughing. Damn it.
Do you want me to stop and start recording again, or just let go?
Nah, it's fine. We'll just keep recording like this. Alright. This is the game. I mean, fuck. Anyway.
I'm sorry.
What just happened?
I'm sorry, but like, just right in like the middle of that David Hayter growl, just like, just as you lost your composure, your voice cracked and it was perfect.
Oh, I'm gonna keep that in, promise. I'll show you to how embarrassed they get. We'll see. All right. Bonus edition of the Game Mavens podcast. I am the host, the person who brings everyone together, Joey Shinoguchi, and this is a very special episode because around the time we recorded the first, Ryan Kincaid and George Bacoris recorded the first Metal Gear Game Mavens, it was like we started off talking about Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2 Solid Snake, and then we were going to talk about Metal Gear Solid 1, because that was like the sort of plan. And then things kind of spiraled out of control with this tangent that we've often mentioned in the subsequent episodes that we've recorded. Well, here is the episode in question, like that tangent in question. It was, you know, and obviously we cut off talking about Metal Gear Solid 1 because we spent so much time talking about Metal Gear Solid 2 versus 4, and like, I think Harry Potter and Twilight got in that discussion, and I hope it's in there, but like, there's also the thing about Guitaru Man. Anyway, it's all pretty awesome, and hope you enjoy. Yeah, it's definitely been a couple months coming, so I guess I can legitimately say that I kept you waiting.
Never get away from those damn ninjas.
Or those poisonous hamsters.
I would like to see that make a return, actually. When Kojima said, I brought a character back from the dead, I was like, please let it be the hamsters!
Oh yeah, venomous. No, this should be like one of the beauty beasts, venomous hamster.
At least it'll make more sense than MGS4.
Well, the dwarf geckos could have been like little like hamsters, hands or baby
ass. You know what?
Silent Hill style.
What's so funny is that I will even buy the poisonous hamsters. You know, I'll put up with the poisonous hamsters.
It's because of nanomachines.
There's one thing in Metal Gear 2 that's so ridiculous that I can't know how how anybody is supposed to fall for this. But at one point you have to collect eggs, and certain eggs have snakes in them, and if you have to go out and hatch the egg, and if it has a snake it'll bite you. I think it maybe eats a ration or something. I can't remember. It's been a long time. But you're looking for an owl egg because there's a guard standing out in front of a building, and when it hatches and the owl hoots, the guard figures, oh, it must be nighttime, and leaves his post, even though it's broad daylight.
What?
And that is an actual required task in the game.
That is spectacular. That is most brilliantly avant-garde thing ever. Kojima was flipping us the bird years before we ever noticed. Holy shit.
And we're shocked that you know,
I implore you guys, if you have not played Metal Gear 2, you have to play this game. Because
I have to now. I have this perverse love for creators, especially game designers, who despise their own audience. Which is why I really like Kojima and Koichi Suda.
Oh, Suda's amazing.
Because, like, I mean, Suda, I mean, you know, it's the same thing. Like, they're just fucking punk rockers. Like,
yeah.
Like, in their world, their fans are all posers. So, like, I love that. Like, I'm sitting here and I'm imagining Kojima as, like, a younger man in the late 80s being like, oh, dude, this egg shit, this is so fucking great. I'm gonna put in some bullshit about some guy hearing an owl and thinking that it's nighttime even though it's broad daylight and these fuckers are gonna eat it up. This is gonna be so fucking great. Like, I could totally see that pride, that just, that amazing corrosive arrogance that drives the man. I love it. I love it to death.
That's why I love Metal Gear Solid 2, because it's basically an entire game based around that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he realized,
I'm going to put you through some awful shit, and you're going to like it.
But the worst part was they didn't like it. You know, and I think that kind of shattered him a bit. Like, it killed his self-confidence.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I actually kind of go in the other direction of that, which was that, you know, he's a quirky guy. He likes to do weird shit. So he makes Metal Gear Solid on the PS1, does some weird shit, breaks a lot of new ground cinematically.
What was the term? Tim Rogers had a good term for this, actually. It was he called it pleasantly postmodern, and I think that's a good descriptor.
Yeah, no, that's about right. But you know what he ended up, you know, what ended up happening was when he started working on MGS2, and the fans found out that he was making another game. Everybody started clamoring for more of the same. They said, we want more Solid Snake, we want more Shadow Moses, we want to do more of all of the shit that we've already done, right? And of course, like, to somebody who likes to be creative and try new things, that's fucking anathema. So, like, I'm just picturing Kojima sitting there, you know, working on MGS2, trying to come up with, like, you know, some really wild, outlandish ideas, trying to do something completely new and different and unexpected. And then gradually starting to hear stories from, you know, from the PR monkeys and the guys who are reading the forums and, you know, the people who are doing the marketing and the PR. And they're going, hey, Kojima-san, the fans want you to do another game that's exactly like the one that you just did. And I just imagine him just, like, grabbing, like, all of the papers that he had on his desk, throwing them in the air and go, well, fuck it then. Fuck it. I'm gonna give them that.
That's
fuck
the guy
all.
I miss. That
fuck
is the guy I miss because I can buy
hell.
That.
And if you he, and you know, what that was what he did is he goes, okay, you want more of the same? Fuck you. I'm giving you more of the same, and I'm gonna make it suck. But the nice thing was that when that happened, when everybody else got pissed off at MGS2 and didn't like it, and he sort of got his wish, the interesting thing was that the expectations started to die down. And when he announced MGS3, nobody wanted anything from him because they were like, ah, fucking Metal Gear, jump the shark, all this shit. So he had a blank check to do whatever the fuck he wanted. And that's why Metal Gear Solid 3 is a masterpiece.
And then the same shit
happened again with 4, and it was like,
I have a slightly different perspective. And if you follow
the pattern of,
if you
pattern of how Peace Walker is fun. Anyway, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, if you follow the, I don't know if you've read any of the early design documents for Metal Gear Solid 2. A couple friends of mine translated them not too long ago, and they are so radically different from what we got.
Isn't there, like, Middle East weapons and stuff?
Yeah,
and
here,
then, like,
Liquid Snake steals a prototype Metal Gear from Iraq, and Solid Snake is sent into the Middle East to stop him. So, forgetting for a moment that Liquid is alive again, you know, whatever... and that Snake is in Iraq, that was more or less the premise behind it, was there was an Air Force hangar in Iraq, and Snake would sneak in and stop Liquid from starting trouble in the Middle East, and Johnny would be revealed as a Patriot spy, and yada yada, it was weird, and then eventually at the end, Snake would be revealed to be a spy from China, Which that later was recycled to Eva, but but then what happened was, and what got Metal Gear Solid 2 on its, and I'm not discrediting what you said, because I think that on some level that is what happened. I think he did look at what, you know, the fan response was and said, well, screw that, I'm going to do what I want no matter what.
And the papers he threw up were the original design doc. There you go.
But
there you go, exactly.
But the spark of inspiration that came to him for this was actually the Napster lawsuit.
Oh, yeah. Didn't he talk about this in Metal Gear Saga Volume 1 as well?
Yeah, when the whole Napster lawsuit thing took over, he started looking at how the rules surrounding digital information and peer-to-peer sharing and all of that were changing. You know, the whole game about property and possession and theft and everything was being rewritten. I mean, that was really the breaking ground for you know, all of this, you know, Digital Millennium Copyright Act that we have to deal with now, with like the iPhone being jailbroken and the PlayStation 3, you know, all of that stuff. It all finds its origins with Napster. That's where it all started, and people starting to share music, and so he looked at that and he kind of said, okay, well, where's this going to go 4 or 5 years from now? What's going to happen? And that's where it all kind of spiderwebbed out to you know, issues of like controlling information and.
Right,
you know,
then, you know, you get the GW and the...
Yeah, it all went
know,
from there.
Whole computer network, yeah.
And so the whole thing, I mean, it's so depressing to me that so many people didn't like Metal Gear Solid 2, and I feel like if it had gotten a better response, then he would still kind of have that same attitude. It's like, I'm not sure how to put it. Kind of lost my train of thought there.
You were chasing down some big ideas there.
Yep.
Yeah, it's.
And we should like leave those ideas maybe for the Metal Gear Solid 2 episode.
Possibly. Yeah. I'm sorry. Maybe. I completely blanked. I've gone through this so many times in my head.
Too, but then I was like, didn't we just miss another train?
Yeah, completely. I'm sorry. I had a bigger thought there, and it just kind of went.
It just kind of like.
Don't worry. It'll come back to you at like 4:30 a.m. You'll just like.
Long story short,
you'll
I mean,
sit up in bed going, aha!
I feel like everybody that hated the game missed the joke. And
yes.
They're angry that they
missed. That's true.
And everybody who got the joke, even though they're a minority, is like, you know, that was a great joke. And everyone else is like, well, I didn't like it because it was a stupid joke.
Yeah.
You know, and just like Kojima's, he spent almost 4 years on that game. Like 3 years, 8 months, something like that, from conception to release.
Yeah.
If you follow the timeline, and I feel, I mean, he was talking about how he got only like 4 hours of sleep at night at best, and you know it was running him ragged. And you can see in some of the videos where they were doing like, you know, early development and training, and finally when he got his finished, you know, the game has been approved sheet. You know, if you've ever gone through the document of MGS2, you can see tons of these videos. But he looks exhausted. I mean. He hasn't slept. And I feel like when he got that negative response from America, because he's very much a punk designer, or at least he was at that time, but then, you know, when America loved Metal Gear Solid, I think he looked at that as like, oh my gosh, you know, I've found a venue here, because action games at the time didn't really sell well in Japan. Metal Gear Solid did not do well in Japan, not as well as it did in the U.S., which is why Metal Gear Solid 2 was released first in America before Japan, which was kind of unprecedented at the time. That doesn't happen anymore. That didn't happen that back then. It's kind of normal now to see games get a worldwide simultaneous release, but back then a game's going to come out in Japan, and then you'll wait 6 months, and it'll come out in America. He brought it out in America at first because he thought, you know, these guys get it. You know, they like what I made. It's, you know, I'm gonna love MGS2. And then, you know, yeah, it sold well, but, you know, critically, you know, a shit was taken on
basically,
it.
Basically, I mean, basically, nobody was picking up what he was putting down.
Exactly. And it just, I feel like it discouraged him, because when MGS3 came out, now I'm not saying MGS3 was not excellent, because it really was, but it was not a story on the same cerebral level that Metal Gear Solid 2 was. You know, I feel like even though he told an excellent story and one that really kind of pulled at your heartstrings more than anything else he'd told, he toned it down. You know?
It was less cerebral and less abstract. Oh, yes, that is true.
Yeah. And I feel like had Metal Gear Solid 2 gone over a little better, we would have gotten something a little more along the lines of Metal Gear Solid 2. And then Metal Gear Solid 3 comes out, and obviously it's a success. Not the huge media coverage explosion success that Metal Gear Solid 2 was, because at that point everyone had kind of, like you said, written it off as jumped the shark. But people still wanted answers to questions that didn't require answers. And Metal Gear Solid 4 comes out and is more or less a retraction of Metal Gear Solid 2. Everything in that game is more or less targeted towards I want to say almost apologizing for what MGS2 did, and it just felt like MGS4 took a shit on MGS2. It really did.
Well, I mean, yeah, I MGS4, I think, is just a deliberately insincere game. I mean, you know, it's
almost
like
an antithesis, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny, just like, you know, how much of my opinion of MGS4 is reflected in Tim Rogers' Action Button review. Because, you know, I think most of the time Tim likes to write nonsense for the sake of writing nonsense. But his MGS4 review in particular is actually totally valid. You know, he was describing it as though, like, you know, like he was a kid on a Toys R Us shopping spree, going through the shelves of his previous work and just throwing absolutely everything into his cart, and then bringing it up to the cash register and leaving it at the register and going outside and having a cigarette.
Tim Rogers, I mean, the whole Graphomania thing aside, he really hits the nail on the head with that one.
Yes. No, and that's, you know, and I think that's exactly it, you know. the idea of a game that, you know, it's the No More Heroes principle. It's the reason that I idolize Goichi Suda. It's the whole, like, you know, looking at your own audience who's asking for something completely ridiculous, and then acknowledging that what they're asking for is batshit insane, and then just rubbing their noses in it. Be like, aha, you asked for bullshit, here it is, fuck you, asshole.
By the way, bullshit comes from nanomachines.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's exactly why MGS4 is so obnoxious about the nanomachines, why it's so obnoxious about its imagery. It's going, oh, you wanted some really complex cerebral shit, where here's a whole bunch of red herrings. Fuck you, dick. You
know, and on the subject of red herrings, I have to bring up one thing about MGS4. And I know that's not the topic of the podcast, but since we're riding that train...
Well, it's okay. This will be like massive foreshadowing to the rest of the series.
Since we're on the subject...
Do.
Playing through MGS4 my first time, because when I got that game, I was excited. I mean, in hindsight, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and I should have been a little wary about a game like Metal Gear Solid 2 getting a sequel, because it wasn't a game that needed one. But I was excited. I was playing through it, and I'm about, you know, I'm four chapters in. I'm just finishing Shadow Moses, and you know, you don't really process everything that you saw in MGS4 until the game ends, and you go, that was fucking it, you know, like
yeah.
that was what we were waiting for. That was it. So I mean, I was still kind of riding the high of the game, and it just got through the Rex versus Ray battle, which the first time you play that dude, your blood is pumping. You know, you're like, this is fucking incredible. Oh my god.
You just came out of an exploding tunnel.
Exactly. Like everything
that goes that menaced you the entire game.
Like, your heart is beating a mile a minute, and your hands are like digging into the controller, and it's fucking incredible. And I was having flashbacks to Metal Gear Solid 2, because you see Outer Haven, rise out of the sea, and right on the side is Mount Snakemore, which is the most fucking ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And I'm looking at that thinking, okay, this is batshit insane. This is it. This is the Arsenal gear moment, you know? This is when everything is going to start going mindfuck on you. This is when you're going to go into the belly of the beast, and the secrets will be revealed, and they're going to take you on the brain trip, and the game sheds its skin, and you get what this has all been about. It's finally going to make sense. And nothing.
And the mindfuck didn't happen.
Well, but... it's like, I feel like Kojima was dangling a carrot in front of your face, you know, and then just he kept jerking it away, you know? Because when you get to GW's server room, you know, after the, you know, there's so much emotional impact between, you know, like Raiden getting crushed again and getting killed over and over and over and over again, and fighting Rex and Rey, and then going through the microwave hallway as Snake is practically dying, and, you know, it's all this really emotional stuff, and you get to GW's server room, and for me, at least, I remember GW as being this ominous presence that accompanies you throughout the entirety of Metal Gear Solid 2. Kind of like Shodan in System Shock 2, you know?
Yeah.
It's exactly like that to me. I mean, it really mirrors System Shock 2 in that respect. And so I'm expecting, like, the great return of the Colonel or some ominous voice or, you know, fuck it, we're already knee-deep in the 2001, and, you know, allegories. We might as well just do the whole HAL thing. I mean, you know, like, welcome, Dave. What are you doing, Dave? I feel like he missed that. Either he missed it or he intentionally kind of wanted to invoke that and not follow through, you know? Because you get there,
yeah.
And GW, the Patriots, this overarching villain, this presence that's supposed to be controlling the entire, you know, the entire mythos around what you've been going through, is essentially voiceless by the time you finally confront it. And it's just like, oh, well,
it's
let's...
It's just a box. Yeah,
and you, and you,
fl-
and you flip the switch, and it's gone. You know? I feel like I wanted my exposition. I wanted my Neo meeting the architect and getting 12 minutes of just mind-bending dialogue, you know? I wanted my Will Ferrell, damn it.
Yeah.
And
would have been nuts if, like, what'd you call it?
Concurrently!
Like, the, what you call it? Like the
ergo,
GW,
I will
like,
go up on your candy ass!
Hero's body right there, and he's, like, talking to you somehow.
I wanted that. And
he's,
and,
like, the leader from Bionic Commando, and you have to make his head explode.
And nothing, you know? So,
well,
yeah.
In an odd way, I almost feel as though the anticlimax was deliberate.
Oh, no doubt it was.
You know, I mean, like again, as a sort of, like, a final fuck you. Because, I mean, I think to me... When I think of MGS2 and MGS4, like those two games in particular, to me, those games are the intellectual equivalent of No More Heroes making you jack off with the Wiimote. That's what it is. Because that's what No More Heroes is. No More Heroes is, hey man, you get to be this like total badass with a lightsaber, and you're like, you're so fucking cool, and you're gonna kill these guys, and they're gonna explode in showers of blood and gold coins. It's so fucking rad, dude, bro. And
yeah, it's then, essentially Suda 51 is essentially Suda 51 deconstructing Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah,
that's
it's
what
the same
it is.
Thing, you know, and there's that inevitable moment when, you know, like, the dude bro realizes, oh, wait a second, this guy is this, like, really, like, kind of skeezy fuck who's trying to kill a whole bunch of people so he can sleep with an underage woman. He bought a lightsaber on fucking eBay, he's got hentai on his walls, and, oh my god, I'm jacking off, what is this? And then you have this moment of, like, you recoil in horror while, you know... Suda is, like, you know, sitting in his ivory tower somewhere in Japan going, ha fucking tools.
He's sitting in the ivory tower on the toilet going, like, just as planned.
Yeah, well, you know, and I guess to me, you know, MGS2 and MGS4 are sort of the intellectual equivalent of that. Of, you know, of, like, you know, instead of this, like, you know, very simple, vulgar thing... Of you, like, oh, guess I better recharge the batteries in my ultimate lightsaber. Oh, fuck, no.
It's just
no.
where MGS2 is more, I want to say it's more encouraging for you to try and unwrap what it has. Even if the message is something is as simple as, you know, make your own decisions.
Yeah.
At least it was enticing. And then with Metal Gear Solid 4, it's more like being dragged back in by your hair. It's, I don't even know, yeah. Man. That game just, I can't play it without twitching slightly.
It's a big sigh of a game. It's a very big, like, you know, even those, like, those moments of, like, "Welp, Snake, it's time for you to change discs. Oh, wait, no, we're on a Blu-ray disc, so you don't have to." Like it's this.
You
just
have to install every
other game.
It is so, I mean, exactly, it is so forced. It's just this, like, really contrived. It's like, you almost get the sense.
There's
that, like,
only one scene in Act 4 that stands out to me whenever I remember it.
Why do I think I know what you're going to say?
It's when you fall out of Metal Gear Rex and all such running away. He's like, "Ah, just pointing at you, just running away."
No, I thought you were going to...
Right afterward, he's like, "God damn it, get out of here."
I thought you were going to talk about the Meryl-Johnny makeout shootout.
No, Act 4, not
oh,
Act 5.
Oh, God.
That's Act 5.
What? What in the hell?
You know what? Like, oh God, I had totally forgot about that. But I mean, again, that's exactly the kind of attitude that went into making that game. It's just like, just give them what they want, man. I don't fucking care anymore.
I never wanted that.
And then, like, you can hear that in the game. You can hear the abject sorrow of everybody involved. You know, some guy someday is going to be telling his grandkids that he spent years of his life animating a monkey wearing a diaper drinking Hebrew Coca-Cola.
even worse than that, it's going to be the guy who's telling his grandkids that he motion-capped the monkey in the diaper drinking the cola.
Or the guy who mo-capped a dude shitting his pants.
And running away in fear from an PMC, yeah.
That was ridiculous to me. I still remember that moment where I'm sitting there and I'm like, "All right, cool, playing this game. It's, wait a second, are we about to make a bathroom joke? Is this gonna be a fart joke right here? Oh wait, no, it is a diarrhea joke. Dude is actually shitting his pants.
And the
fucking what? My brain short-circuited, and I don't remember anything
later,
from, like, an
Snake
hour after that.
Takes the barrel, and just, like, he just, like, goes inside. Even though Akiba just shit himself inside there, it just nods. He's like, "Yeah, this is gonna be a great replacement to a cardboard box."
And it's such an interesting dynamic, too, because you look at Metal Gear Solid 1 and Metal Gear Solid 2 and even Metal Gear Solid 3 to some extent, and you have those kind of jokes, and they work. But
yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 4 does it, and I don't know how to even word it, but it's, I don't want to say it can't justify them, but it almost tries to. Like, oh, we're here, we may as well just go through with it, and dude, ugh.
Is it sort of like how some people would play Grand Theft Auto 4, and then, like, it was something, like, more realistic? And then they didn't want to do the stuff they did back in the day, like drive up the, like, the 5-star alarm thing, like kill, like, random people and drive recklessly and, like, just cause chaos because it seemed like a bit
because it seemed a bit too much.
I don't know. And also,
I mean,
the protagonist is, like, much, like way different from, like, the old ones.
I mean, I think also a lot of it has to do with the fact that,
like, less abstraction, you know, people... is, like, way too real or something like that.
I mean, I don't think it was that. I think it's more the fact that people who appreciate, you know, Metal Gear to that extent, people who've been fans of Metal Gear, are much older now.
Oh yeah.
And you know, the fact is that, like, you know, we we grew up, we became adults, and, you know, MGS still has these moments where, oh, let's make a guy poop his pants, they'll find that shit hilarious, and you're like, what, no.
But the biggest insult of all, I think, is the fact that, you know, among the hardcore crowd, and when I say the hardcore crowd, I guess I have to be a little more specific, because there's three levels of there's three subsets of Metal Gear fans. There's the kind who play it for the awesome shooter gameplay and stealth stuff, and they just like it as a game. They like it as a game and nothing else. You know, I guess that's the most diluted way to appreciate Metal Gear, is just as a game. Okay.
Diluted? You mean D-I-L-E-T-E-D?
Yeah, essentially.
Because okay, it sounded like D E L U D E D, like, you know.
Just, no. Anyway, so you have those. You have that group. The second group you have are the people who look at it as some kind of Lucas-esque epic, and they're taking the series as they use the people who use the word epic or saga. You know, and I know that in official marketing the term saga has been thrown around, but you get what I mean. People who look at it as some Lord of the Rings large. You know, there's this complete circular idea around this grand scheme of the world of Metal Gear, and we must appreciate it as that is what it is. And that's like the second tier, and then the third tier are people who generally look at it as this self-referential metafiction, you know, collection of action pastiches and homages and parodies, and just kind of look at it as something that just kind of plays with genre conventions and makes fun of them while at the same time appreciating them. And I mean, there's three different levels to kind of appreciate it there. But getting back to it, the biggest insult to that, or at least to the third tier people, is when they look at something like Metal Gear Solid 4 that openly embraces that second tier of everything is epic and well collected and together and this group of fans play it and they don't get that they're being made fun of, you know?
Yeah.
And then Famitsu gives it a fucking 40. And I just, I look at that and I think to myself, and people wonder why the games as art argument is so hard to win. Because of this bullshit. Because you look at Metal Gear Solid 2 and you laugh it off, and then you look at Metal Gear Solid 4 and say, this is art, I'm clapping like Citizen Kane as hard as I can. You know,
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's, and I think that is one of the, you know, one of the biggest obstacles is the fact that, you know, we have, I mean, you know, there are plenty of, you know, very intelligent and mature and intellectually responsible human beings who, you know, care about video games as an art form and are willing to say, hey, this is art because it is capable of expressing things that actually have meaning and value. But unfortunately, there's a much larger group that also insists just as loudly and with just as much conviction that video games are art, but they're also the kinds of people who take Metal Gear Solid 4 completely seriously. So, you know, I mean, like, the problem is that they, you know, people like that, people who take that sort of attitude, people who take postmodern work like MGS2, right, or any Metal Gear game, completely at face value, they make themselves into straw men for
the kind of people who read the New York trilogy and go away saying that was a shitty book. What the fuck did that mean anyway? It kept talking about itself.
Yeah. It's too bad.
And then go off to read Twilight and Harry Potter. I know that's kind of overgeneralizing, but
you have invoked the darkest enemy of my life, Stephanie Meyer. Oh. Harry Potter, I'm totally okay with.
Yeah.
Except for the occasional accusations that I hear of, like, I don't know if you have ever been, like, subjected to the experience of being in a room with somebody who thinks that Lord of the Rings is a ripoff of Harry Potter.
What? All right, we're derailing for a minute because you need to elaborate.
Those people exist. They are terrifying. I don't really think that there's anything inherently wrong with the Harry Potter series, especially because they seem to encapsulate
kind of a chronological issue there.
No, there definitely is, but I mean, again, hey, I live in America, and what the fuck are you gonna do?
I guess we still have people who think the world is flat, so.
Well, there you go. The Harry Potter series, you know, I think a lot of it is, you know.
I like the movies.
It's kind of silly, like easy to ignore, or whatever. But, I mean, at the very least,
No one's trying to pass it off as serious literature.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is also that, you know, the Harry Potter novels, you know, they seem to encapsulate some pretty worthwhile ideals. The characters are heroic. They work together. They have conviction. At the very least, they represent something positive.
Yeah.
Twilight, on the other hand, is just this like total inversion of anything that is at all even remotely progressive or modern or anything.
I can safely say I know nothing about Twilight other than it involves a pedophile.
It is so much worse than you could possibly imagine. It is okay. Look, I have. I will end this tangent on this one fact, which is the fact that I know two people, not just one guy. This is not an isolated incident. I know two people who do not know each other, do not in any way associate with the same group of people. These are two completely isolated incidents. Two guys who have been dumped, one by a girlfriend, one by a fiancé, because they did not closely enough resemble the dude from the book.
He didn't sparkle enough, is that what you're saying?
He didn't sparkle, he didn't have the capacity to kill her, and he didn't thirst for her blood. I don't fucking know.
Bullet dodged.
Exactly. No, I told both of them exactly the same thing. We're like, dude, you got fucking lucky, man. She is crazy.
20 years from now, you do not want to be married to that person because they will be in therapy and running your wallet dry. I have to ask this. I hate to go back to the tangent, but you've piqued my interest. I have to ask, how could they justify the Lord of the Rings ripping off Harry Potter? Please give me more on that, because I gotta hear this.
Oh, because the Lord of the Rings movies came out after the Harry Potter books?
Dude,
obviously.
Yeah. I know.
I mean, you did point this out to them, right?
Oh, I wasn't even in the conversation. I was like 30 feet away grinding my teeth because I was overhearing this conversation.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. That's...
I mean, like... Dude. The inside of my mouth sounded like a fucking belt sander. It was... It was pretty terrible. It was awful. I now understand what it feels like to go into go into crack withdrawals.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was,
I mean, I was so glad when, you know, I heard books like, before I really followed any of the subculture around it, but books like Harry Potter and Twilight are getting kids to read again, and I wonder now, at what cost?
Well, I mean, okay, kids reading Harry Potter?
That's fine. You know what? Okay, that's fine.
Right?
That's
because,
fine.
You know, but again, I think that the Harry Potter novels in general represent some pretty positive stuff to aspire to. You know, I mean, they're sort of
general
shallow,
values, you know, honesty, courage, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's all the standard boilerplate stuff, right? Twilight is fucking poison. Like Twilight sends women back in time to the '40s. That's what it does.
Isn't the girl though like isn't she like 17 and the vampire dude is something like
50 billion years old,
like 190 or some
yes.
shit.
Yes.
So
yes.
How is that not a book that promotes pedophilia?
Dude, news to me, man. I've no fucking clue.
That's the first thing that I thought. It's this thing where like the werewolf or something like that, like the other dude, like he imprints on. As a potential mate, like their kid.
Does he like? Lift his leg and mark his territory or something?
I do not know. I'm glad I don't know it that much. But I'm just like, how do I?
Okay,
know I just want to bang my head. Like you know, in Dead Space, where like there's that dude who's like just barely
just
alive,
banging
his head
against
the wall
until
he crushes his skull and dies. That's what I feel like doing when I like.
Well, okay. Here's.
I think we're shooting fish in a barrel here.
Well, I mean, you know, here's the funny thing about, you know, about Twilight and sort of my experience with it is that I have this perverse love for Lovecraft and Robert W. Chambers and Robert E. Howard, and like especially Chambers, you know, The King in Yellow, right? The idea that pervades all of the short stories in The King in Yellow is the idea that there exists a piece of literature that can drive you insane just from having read it, right? And so, of course, when I start hearing stories about Twilight...
Something just happened?
And, well, no, it's just, like, you know, when I started hearing stories about Twilight and about...
Yeah, the audio's cutting out a bit.
It's kind of echoing.
Yeah, I don't know where that's coming from.
It seems to be just you doing it.
Huh. That is
the fox guy kicking in. Holy shit.
Oh god, no! My time is limited.
Quick, get a 4-year-old to program a fix.
Yes. Does one of you have like your volume?
Oh, it's fine now.
Turned up, maybe. Oh, okay. But in any case, it's this like when I first started hearing stories about the ridiculous nonsense that that is in the Twilight novels. There was a part of me that thought, you know, I must delve into this. I must understand the madness here, because you know, I'm a climber. I'm a skydiver. I'm like fucking like you know, risk my life just to you know get a thrill, right?
Yeah, but Victorian Gothic fiction, this is not.
No, most definitely not. But then, of course, you know what happened was, you know, when I started hearing about just the awful, awful bullshit that appears in those books, I'm sitting there and I'm going, I wonder if this is the King in Yellow we've all been waiting for. I wonder if this truly is a piece of literature that can drive one mad. So, you know, I start reading plot synopses and, you know, skimming through this. Of course, the entire time kind of trying to analyze, you know, like, the origins of, like, you know, where the fuck did these ideas come from? Of course, you know, discovering that Stephanie Meyer is an extremely repressed and very perverted woman, grew up in a very oppressive Mormon household, so has these, like,
oh,
really,
Jesus Christ.
Really fucked up ideas about sex, right? So, you know, and then you dig deeper into it, and you start reading interviews with the actors from the movie, and all of the actors are fully aware that the story is really fucking creepy, and they're all creeped out by Stephanie Myers, and they all think that she's crazy, and they hate their own characters, but they're just, like, playing it off because it's a fucking job.
They're probably making a ridiculous amount of money off of it.
They are making a ridiculous amount of money, but, like, there was a point where, like, they were interviewing, what's his name? Robert Pattinson, the guy who plays, like, the main vampire. Yeah. And he was literally like, yeah, like, you know, I was reading the script and it was, like, really obvious to me that, like, this woman is, like, fantasizing about making love to my character, but then she's, like, just writing it into the story and it's, like, really fucked up. It's basically, like, a really terrible self-insertion fanfic, but without the original fiction to build from. It's just this, like, standalone, just awful slash fic that, like, really, in any civilized, rational society, the Twilight novels would be placed in the same category as the Anne Frank and Goku from Dragon Ball Z crossover.
So what we have is like a Mary Sue with a mental disorder?
Yes, yes, that is exactly what it is. Dude, this character is like the biggest fucking Mary Sue ever. It's fucking awesome. Except she has no redeeming qualities whatsoever, and no fewer than three ridiculously hot immortal guys, like, fall in love with her for no reason.
Jesus.
It's, dude, it is perversely spectacular. But also, like, insidious and evil at the same time, because it basically teaches women that they're supposed to be weak and look for men to look after them. And the basic premise of him being in love with her is the fact that he's in love with her, but he also wants to kill her and eat her. So the fact that he's not killing her and eating her is the reason that she loves him, because that must mean that he loves her a lot.
So he's Dexter.
Kind of, yeah. Except even more fucked up and ridiculous. And also emo.
Oh, Jesus. Emo Dexter, that's all we need.
Yeah, exactly. You know, at least Dexter has the good sense to be fucking, like, emotionally ambivalent, right?
And people but, were shocked that Kojima was, like, one of the panelists at a Twilight fan art.
Oh my god, I know, that's even worse that I heard Kojima is a fan of Twilight.
Like, and also, like,
is
Yoshi,
he?
I think also, like, yeah. Yoshi Sanamoto illustrated Evangelion.
Yeah, he was he and the two of them were judges at a Twilight Japanese fan art competition.
Really?
Yes. And,
really?
And then you hear that Kojima enjoys Twilight, and then you go back to Metal Gear Solid 4, and suddenly things start fitting together. You know,
it's entirely possible, dude. I could. Twilight is almost as bad as Scientology. I mean, it's like it is on that level of like insidious evil.
Yeah,
nonsense.
But at least L. Ron Hubbard could write.
No, he couldn't. He was a hack.
I know. It was a joke. It was a bad joke. I apologize.
Okay. No, I mean, it's funny because, like, you know, you put the two next to each other, they're both really terrible writers. I mean, it's like, it's basically, you have this woman who fantasizes about this perfect man and just writes all of her, like, you know, writes down all of her sexual fantasies into this novel about necrophilia. And of course, you know, her perfect man is also just like a really fucked up individual that basically, I mean, you know, it's like the main character, she loves this guy on the basis of him not killing and eating her.
So it's like extreme Stockholm syndrome.
It's yeah, but she gets it before like they even start dating. It's like it's oh god. But then of course at the same time he's also like really like he wants to be celibate and he wants to get married before they can fuck. It's so it's just like so she's trying to reconcile all this like weird Christian programming that she got. And so it's this like terrible like it's just basically all of her issues just kind of like crashing into each other at high velocity and then just writing a really terrible novel out of the wreckage. And, like, she reuses adjectives, and she's, oh, God, she's fucking awful.
So the way you've explained it, I mean, I guess Stephanie Meyer just one day said, well, I could either go to therapy or write a book.
Yeah, basically. I mean, like, I'm telling you, man, I give her, like, another couple of years before she starts a fucking church, man.
Don't joke, man. If Star Wars can get a religion, dude. If Star Wars can get a religion, man, you joke, but...
Well, hey, you know, like the moment that she starts invoking Douglas DC-8s without the engines on them flying into volcanoes, the moment that that happens, then we're all just like, all right, this is all the same shit all over again. Fuck everything, I'm done. Somewhere in the distance, Harlan Ellison is spinning in his grave. Man hasn't even been buried yet, and he's spinning in his grave. So yeah, it was. that's the fox die. Oh God,
Jesus,
dying,
isn't it?
No, it's not.
No, it ain't.
Yeah, that's one thing I never... Going back to Metal Gear Solid 4 since we've kind of gone...
No, we're going to stop right there.
Oh.
I'm sorry. We got to hold this shit back.
No! All right.
I just switched all the macros. I'm sorry, George. Can I just unplug them again?
No. Oh, God. No!
Smash triangle more! I tried a backflip here with a sword in my mouth, but it ain't working.
The theme is sense, because it makes none.
Press the button faster!
Until we meet again, Mr. Drake.